Hello and welcome to another edition of Road to the Draft. I'm Nat Edwards and joining me as always is AFL.com.au draft expert Callum Toomey. Cal, how are you?
Good, thanks, Nat. Yeah, the championships are done. So
I know, you must have a little bit more free time on your hands.
Only a tiny bit. No, plenty to still be done. But yeah, the championships wrapped up last week. Obviously, came down to that Vic Metro South Australia game to decide the Div 1 title.
I couldn't believe WA actually won a game. Finally.
It was a good win too. They kept their best for last. But yeah, it was a good finish to the championships. I think everyone was pretty happy with how the format played out.
And we should just mention also the Lark medal obviously went to Christian Petrarca as the best player in Division 1.
Yep.
And Division 2, of course, Isaac Heaney, who we've spoken to before and spoken about numerous times. So he took out the Division 2 Harrison medal for
That's
best
right.
player.
Yeah, they were standouts, definitely. Both great midfielders. And if they're in an open draft, obviously Petrarca is, but if Heaney was available to all clubs, I think he'd be a top five pick as well.
All right. Well, this week we have a very special guest in the studio with us. He was the Crows recruiting manager from 1995 to 2007 and then went on to be football operations boss at the Bulldogs and the Hawks. And I'm speaking, of course, of James Fantasia. James, thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in, mate.
Yeah, this is very good. Thank you. Yeah, it's a great time of the year, actually, when you get to the conclusion of the AFL Under 18 Championships, and very exciting times for those young men who've been able to shine on the big stage.
Did you have a chance to go and check out some of the games at all?
I did, yes. I was very fortunate because my son was playing in an amateur league state game in Perth at the same time the South Australian, Western Australian game was on, so I ducked over there and got to see them play in both Western Australia, South Australia, and then, of course, in Victoria.
And that was when Jared Pickett ran amok, wasn't it?
He did. He had an outstanding game. So I can see how he's going to prick some serious interest.
He's a good player, isn't he?
You know, but he's still got some questions that he needs to be answered in terms of how he, you know, plays. But he certainly gave himself every opportunity now.
Now, we thought we'd get you in to talk about recruiting, some old war stories, some good, bad, and ugly. We'll get through them.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah, I think I've got a tick in every of those, all those boxes.
As most recruiters do, but you obviously oversaw the building of that 95 or 97, 98 premiership list and then onwards to another premiership tilt sort of in the mid-2000s too. I guess we haven't seen too much of you since last year. Obviously, you left the Hawks with illness. How's everything going
No, thanks, Cal. Look, certainly let me open up with the health issue. That came as a massive surprise and kind of crept up on me, and that was very, very hard to handle, to be honest. I was at a fantastic club who were just terrific through that whole period. And obviously they went on to succeed in winning the premiership. So, you know, it was just a great honour to have even had, you know, 6 months there. But, yes, had a very scary, without going into all the details, yep. You know, I did have a seizure. And, that kind of knocked me around and I was told that I needed a bit of time off. But what I can say is I've had, a good rest and have had the tick of approvals and right through the whole health issue. So,
good news.
Yeah, it's all go, and I've really enjoyed my last 12 months, kind of trying to find maybe what I can do in the future and how that might come together. And yeah, it's been good fun.
And you're studying as well?
Yeah, gone back to study. Believe it or not, you're never too old to go and learn. Back to school. I've taken up a law degree, which is great. I did my MBA a few years back, and it really did sharpen my interest around, you know, the law, and then being involved as a general manager and even recruiting for 12 years. I mean, you're just in the thick of contract negotiations in all levels, shapes and forms. And these days with compliance and the governance required, you just got to get it right. And if you don't, as we've seen even in the not too short past, there's been some, you know, significant penalties for teams that just don't get it right.
Do you miss footy?
Oh, at the moment, I miss being around the football club and the people involved. That's always very special, and that's one of the great privileges of being involved at the AFL level. I'm not missing the pressures that come along with the day-to-day running of a football club. They're wide and varied and But it's great fun. It really is. But the challenges are there, no doubt. And, and that's just the nature of the beast.
Let's get stuck in anything. So the championships have just ended. for a recruiter, how much importance is placed on the Under 18 Championship? So we hear so much about it. It's the midpoint of the year. We talk about it so much. I guess how much during your period as a recruiter at the Crows did you place on it? Was it a piece of the puzzle? How big was the piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, no, it's a good point, mate, because, look, I always felt that regardless of how the year was travelling, post the championships, those muddy waters began to clear. You've been able to have a reasonable look. And of course, I just need to make the point that back when I was actually in charge of recruiting, you didn't have list managers, you were the whole shooting match. Yeah. But, you know, the format was very different. You know, we had three or four days of, over a week, really, and there was a mid-game, midweek. And
it was a full-on carnival,
yeah,
wasn't
and so, unfortunately, you'd go to the Gold Coast, for example, and where you'd expect it to be, sunshine and beautiful, well, you know, you might have had a storm that week, and you still didn't get to see a really good showcase of what the young footballers offered up. I think the format today is just brilliant, and I think all the states and certainly all the AFL clubs have embraced it. It's been enormous. So it does play a significant part, there's no doubt, but it is a part of the puzzle, and I think that's the clear point there. It's for some young players, it's an opportunity to genuinely, you know, push their case.
Yeah.
And for others, it's just confirming. And for others, you look at them, they may even have a poor championships, but that's not necessarily going to interfere with where they're going to get to.
But do you keep coming back to it, though? Like, let's say there's a lot of tools in this year's draft, and we've heard so much about some of the guys, you know, the big names, Hugh Goddard, Tom Lamb, Jake Lever obviously didn't play at all with his knee reconstruction, a few other guys as well, and they didn't all reach their peak throughout the championships for various reasons, injuries, form, whatnot. Do you come back to it when you interview them in September, August, you know, October? Do you say, well, what happened there? Or is that, do you reflect on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, what they do is look through the whole part of their season and then break that down and then isolate some issues that they may have presented. And then you would certainly delve a bit deeper and not just with the player when you're interviewing the player. They're the things that you would uncover and talk through with the coach. And I think these days with the relationship and certainly the number of recruiting people within the football clubs, they're able to maintain a fairly genuine communication link and relationship. So often they'll know about a problem or an issue or a significant part of where a player might be at throughout the year rather than just get that information post. But they're really important things because, you know, there's just the practical component of recruiting, just breaking it down to the basics. You can only have so much time in front of a player.
Yeah.
I mean, rules and regulations, you go to a draft camp, you've still got to get through, you know, 40 to 50 players. Often there's some that you just probably don't even want to talk to because you know where they're at already and you've just got to get your numbers right. You get 10 minutes. You know,
it's not long, is it?
You need to be able to pick the right questions because you want to get to the information that you're trying to get out, so you've got to get your questions and answers right. You know, clubs these days will even have psychologists who prepare those questions to ensure they maximise, and then sometimes they're sitting in the room to give you the feedback.
The body language and all the
keeps
rest.
Going. Yeah. It's quite amazing.
And now as well, you have to let the AFL know every time you're talking to a player under the new rules, so that's obviously a change too.
How many recruiters did you actually have under you? Because obviously there's so many games. You've got school games as well as, you know, your state league and then your championships. Trying to get to all of those across a weekend would be pretty hectic. How many do you did you have under you at Adelaide?
Well, back in the day, you've got to remember, this is how old I am, I hate to show my age here, but I was actually involved when it was still, it was just transitioning from part-time into a full-time.
Yep.
So, in fact, my first job as the recruiting manager, I would house players and find employment or put them through, find educational opportunities and so on and so forth, which is now very much part of the player welfare manager.
Yep. It's not exactly the role that Graham Wright's doing at Hawthorn.
No, of course.
Jason McCartney at the Dogs or anything.
But that was just the development of not only us moving professionally with our playing group, but certainly, you know, in the administration. So I was very fortunate to be able to even, you know, work through all those, you know, through that time frame. So to see it came to where it was, and then it just kept growing from there. So even as a recruiter, there was only one person at every club, And I don't want to go into too much here, but St Kilda, for example, who were really struggling financially, or North Melbourne, who have struggled financially. I mean, their recruiters sometimes, instead of jumping on a kite, because it was a bit more expensive back then, you know, you couldn't get a $50 plane fare. It was, you know, you start 350 upwards type of thing. If it was tight, they were jumping in cars and driving 8 hours. Yeah, I mean, it was things have changed. Now most clubs would have 3 or 4 full-time recruiters, and in some case, you know, they've got a terrific network which extends to include, you know, a lot more time focus around their specific area. So for me, we had virtually volunteers.
Wow.
But we did pay a few of our guys, and we had probably 7 key agents, and under them probably another 3 or 4. But I've got to say, if the resources were available to me in that day, those guys would have felt absolutely comfortable making them professionals, because they did give up that much time and effort.
Exactly.
And I relied on them very, very heavily. They were a fantastic group.
97-98, that premiership list was obviously in its infancy when you got there. A few more players come on board in the next preceding 2 years or so. How do the concessions that the Crows got compared to what the Giants, Suns have been given over the last few years in modern times?
Well, it was quite different in those days in terms of where you started, and understanding too that, you know, we all know and agree that South Australia has always been a significant football state. Yeah. So your starting point in terms of the talent, there was always an emerging talent that could always, you know, transition into AFL, VFL football that were home based, and there was a significant group that had already at that stage gone into AFL football. So there was lots of options there, and one of the ones that the AFL took was to provide moratoriums. So really, if you look at the history of the Adelaide Football Club, effectively when they came into fruition in 1991, they didn't even have a recruiting manager. They left that tool, and they had a gentleman by the name of Jack Sutter, who was a brilliant football person and was a great recruiter, but he was part-time.
Right.
And his job for the first 2 years was really just to go and keep an eye on talent across Australia, help build a network.
Yep.
And then Tim Johnson was appointed, I think it was 93. So that's how significant the moratorium was to the footy club. They didn't even need to start gearing that up in a significant way. And then what happened was I was very fortunate because I was involved with South Australia. I was the State Development Director.
Yep.
So I was running the elite programs, as well as overseeing the broad-based programs run right throughout the state. But I was involved not only at the under-16 state teams and appointing coaches and assisting in all that and the organisation, under-18s, and dealing with some just brilliant people. And that was growing in its own stature and importance within the state's development structure and programs. But then I also was running the State of Origin as well.
Right.
So that was a great opportunity just to get a feel for the whole of, you know, where football was being delivered at the highest level, at every level. So I was fortunate because then the Adelaide Football Club, I guess, recognised there was an unusual skill set there that, or is it just the network, perhaps? I'm not sure about skill set.
Go with skill set.
Yeah, I like that better. But it was just it was unique and... And I was well placed to kind of sit in that role, and because I was out there selecting talent, and learning from some really outstanding people like Russell Ebert, who was coaching the side, and you know, sitting down in and discussing how you're looking and feeling about a footballer, etc. It was just a great time. 95, and I don't know if I should give all this up because I'm probably delving a bit much, but. I was led by two outstanding kind of strategic thinkers in the game of football. Bill Sanders was the CEO, and of course Bob Hammond, who was the chairman at the time and later became an AFL commissioner. They just had a very simple plan, and it was quite interesting because as a young man, I think I was in my late 30s? No, sorry, early 30s. Sorry,
you're telling us, mate.
Gee, sorry, early 30s. I was very kind of green behind the ears. But their philosophy was they had some room in their salary cap and they wanted to be very aggressive with trading. Full stop, end of story. Okay. because they were finishing, I think, you know, I'm going back here, they're finishing 12th and, you know, 10, 11, 12th on the ladder. Mm. And so they were just missing out on the real striking end of a draft, and they were kind of just staying in this kind of mid-cycle. Mid-cycle. And there was just an opportunity to change that up by being perhaps a little bit more aggressive. And I've got my own philosophy on it, because I think people may have got caught out a little bit unawares. You know, a young bloke didn't think too much about how we were tackling it. We were very strategic about how we did it. And we in those days, clubs weren't perhaps as professional as they are today. So it was a bit easier to try and talk someone to coming back to Adelaide. Whereas now, you know, it's just that I don't even think comes into it nearly. It's very difficult. The individual who may want to go back home tends to stay at a footy club these days because of the nature of what they provide.
Well, yeah, we look at Bryce Gibbs, like trying to get
it's incredible.
Him back.
Yeah. And that also, you know, we go on about that particular part of the business. But, it was just that we were aggressive and we were able to secure, you know, four really important trades in both of those years. You know, brought in Darren Jarman, brought in Troy Bond, Peter Caven.
Kim Costa.
And keep going. And we were able to get in guys like Shane Ellen. And, so through that process it was good. And then we were fortunate, you know, we were lucky. We had some good drafting and, you know, the Tommy Goodwin and Kane Johnson and, you know, that type of player also just was a nice blend. And, I think in those premierships we brought to the club within those 2 years, you know, 13 of those premiership players. So that was a good part of it.
Can you describe the satisfaction you get grand final day? Not only has your club won a flag, but you've helped build the list. You've helped bring a lot of those players to the club.
Yeah, it's satisfying for everyone involved in a football club, full stop. It's just an enormous sense of achievement. And, you know, you're in football clubs, it's always interesting, and despite how it's portrayed in media and how sometimes it comes across. And we all respect that, you know, there's certain people that need to front the front about how a premiership should be received. Yeah. And it should be your captain, it should be your coach, and there's no doubt about that in my mind. But we all do know that too. There's so many things that need to align to win a premiership. You need an outstanding medical team. You know, had to keep the players on the deck.
Yeah.
You need a great development structure to, when the players come in, to help fast track them and keep them online. And you need a welfare program that collectively, you know, brings the team together. Your coaching group's just so important. So, you know, recruiters. We know.
Take some credit, James.
No, we know where we're placed, and we know that if you. But I was about to. I'm finishing off here. Here's the crescendo. You know, it's very hard to win a premiership if you haven't got the right group and the right list and the right players. Full stop. So, that's in my view. It's such an important part that you get it right. But it's hard to justify sometimes through the course of winning premierships. You know, that it's one particular area, full stop, you know, full stop, that's how I put it.
Important area, though. Like, how much time would you spend? Let's say, for those who wouldn't know, recruiting's it's sort of a different world of the footy world. It's a sort of subset. You don't hear too much from recruiters. They don't like talking in the public. They're pretty quiet, you know, unless they're in their own sort of culture, and then there are a lot of egos, and it's interesting like that. But how much time would you spend? How many weekends away do you spend during a season? Are you away every weekend? How many games would you see? You know, would you hit 200? Would you hit 300 games? How many interviews would you do?
Yeah, it's quite mind-blowing, really, when you start to break it down and look at, actual statistics on, you know, how many games you're viewing. But viewing games are very different, too, than what people may imagine. An example might be that, And again, without getting raving on about it, you need to break these things down to what time of the year or you know, part of the program you're viewing. Because at the start of the year, it's very much an open net, just trying to capture as many games as you can with yourself and your network.
Yep.
And by the way, you always start. There's always a starting list.
Yeah.
There's always the year before or
under-16s,
state teams or all Australian teams.
Little asterisks next to their name.
Yeah, and people have already started that process. So there's always a starting list anyway of in terms of players we're going to report on and keep a running record on. But, you're casting the net in the first part. So if you went to, for me, I want to maximise not only my opportunity to see a group of players, but now I've got to think about my budget as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so if I'm going to get to Perth, you know, that's a $2,000 expense.
Yep.
just straight off the bat. So I want to make sure I can get to Friday night footy,
yep,
all day Saturday, all day
make
Sunday.
The most of it.
In cases where I'm still looking, I'm going to go only for a half a footy at one ground and all coordinate it so I can make sure I get to the next ground in time to see that half a footy. And you often break it down in that regard. So I suppose that when it's all said and done, you're watching, you know, arguably 6 to 8 games of football a weekend, full stop, you know, in its entirety. And you've got a network out there, you know, that are watching, you know, virtually every game across Australia. They're providing a report.
It's very full on. Now, I do want to ask you, there's been a lot of talk this year about perhaps raising the draft age and making it for 19-year-olds. What are your thoughts on that? Are you happy with where it is at, or have you seen that maybe there's too much pressure on an 18-year-old battling school and then, you know, trying to get drafted? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, I'm going to show my age here. I've been through this debate and seen the AFL change this rule probably seven or eight times over a long period. And I think they've just about got it right,
okay,
to be upfront. I mean, the issue around, you know, exiting school has always been, I think, the number one key point. And then we still need to kind of reflect too that with a player that's coming through, you can restrict some real opportunity for growth and for some other guys that aren't going to be, the academic, take the academic strip. So they certainly have got a right as well.
What do they do for a year?
Correct. It's so there's this. We need to have a balanced view around that. But you know, my number one focus is always around education. That needs to be protected as best it can. But equally, I think it's very healthy for a young man to be going and getting involved in his last year at matriculation. And then having a really strong interest alongside that, because you just cannot bury yourself in books. And I'm doing it at the, and I'm kind of first hand with it. It's crazy. You do need a balance, and it's a great way to adjust it. And equally, you can't then expect them to do all this football
and not have
something on the other side.
Now let's get into some players. A few rookies come on board the Crows 2002. If you want to talk through them, because they're a pretty successful little period for the club there. Ben Rutten.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to remind me, because you know, they all kind of merge in for me.
I think you'll remember these three. Yeah. Ben Rutten, of course, Marty Matner, who played about 100 games, I think 90 for the club, and went on to start at the Swans. And Nathan Bock, of course, who probably hasn't reached his peak for whatever reasons. Injuries haven't helped him, but was a terrific player at the club too.
Yeah.
Where did you find them?
Oh, well, you know, this is, again, this is a...
That was an interesting year for the
really
club
good discussion
too,
around this one, because I guess, again, you talk about your own beliefs and how things kind of pan out with rules and regulations, and you need to bring that into the fact with recruiting. It's a very important thing. So what happened was the rookie list was born, and I'm not quite sure. It might have been a couple of years old by then. When did it come in, the rookie list, can you recall?
No, I think it was a couple of years
before. So... Basically, we always believe that there was an advantage in South Australia because perhaps some of the outriding states with football, because in Victoria, I'll probably bring it back a step. I think most of us believe that it was more beneficial to keep a rookie from your own state, because some of you are batting a long way back, and just the whole, you know, uprooting a player and then having to...
Yep.
Have to go through those other hardships, let alone get through the battle of the football track. Some thought it might be a bit too long a reach. So there was this genuine thing. Now, say, for example, Western Australian. They take a lot of Western Australians.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you don't take an interstate, but you just have a philosophy
around it. If they're about even.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Right. So we always thought that was an advantage to us as outriding states, because per head and per population playing footy versus the number of teams, 10 teams in Melbourne battling for the same group of pool of players, you know, really we're only battling for between, you know, Port Adelaide and Adelaide or Perth, you know, West Coast and Frio. So that was number one. Number two was, so all those boys were South Australian SANFL players. And then Ben Rutten, then they've all got their own little story. You know, Bocchi had dreadlocks and was going surfing and missed a couple of games here and there. And I played footy with his coach, who was just a superstar coach and superstar footballer. So you got a bit of inside running into who the actual person was. You know, that's the local knowledge type thing. And then same with Ben Rutten was an interesting one because he, you know, we go through this now. It's not an uncommon thing, but Ben Rutten at 16 had a fantastic year. Was playing SANFL league football virtually at 16 years of age, holding down centre half back, beating the you know, the state league centre half forward. He's the same size as you. And people didn't realise, I don't think, that he was actually a very quick, powerful unit. He looks a bit bulky, but he's not slow.
Yeah.
But his turning circle was a bit slow, and it probably got worse after the knee. But so he was in rare form. And then all of a sudden, bang, he goes down with a knee. He has to have a reconstruction. He's a big frame. And if you don't know enough about him already, it's hard to get that information now.
Yeah.
So basically, he's out for most of the next year, comes back in. He's gone through his first draft opportunity. Then he plays the next year. And he didn't set the world on fire, but he showed enough. And it was down the track for us, and we were lucky that he was still there at the pick that we had. So it was a no-brainer. And that's the beauty of the rookie list. You know, you can afford to take the risk on someone who has a knee that's carrying...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's got a potential to get a certain size, and might, under this type of program, is he going to be able to stand up? You just don't know. They're the unknowns.
That was an interesting year for the club, though, a period for the club, given Wayne Carey came on board, Ronnie Burns as well.
Yeah, so we'd finished in a preliminary final. And again, what was very clear to us, and had been clear to us for 2 to 3 years, that we were shy key position players, but key forwards in particular. And we got shot down, and that was we saw an opportunity with Wayne Carey. You know, there would have been at the time, you know, there was 7 or 8 really strong contenders that were seeking his services, and you know, Wayne was doing the rounds and he was meeting people and. You know, and we put together a really professional package to present to him and did a presentation. And I think that was probably a little bit ahead of its time back then.
Yep.
Like, you know, it was like we were, you know, speaking to a sponsor and, you know, doing slideshows. And
It was the Chris Judd experience before the Chris Judd experience
well, quite
happened.
Right. Yeah, but I'm not saying that one at over because Wayne, you know, he was very certain about what he wanted to do, and there was certain boxes that needed to be ticked, and I thought it was a good decision in the end. Most importantly for him as a person, you know, growing again and being back in a team environment, that was really critical. And our guys shined. They learnt a lot on the deck.
Did you consult the playing group with someone like that, such a big name coming to the club? Do you consult the playing group at all?
Oh, very much
how
so.
Do you feel about you know, the potential of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you, you know, and I felt for him in particular. That was there was a very difficult time, based on how much media was getting played to it, you know, without getting into the whole of that era. Not that I want to get into the moral issues of it all, but you know, there were some really difficult moments in all that for everyone concerned. Anyway, we'll leave that one there.
is there a pick you're most proud of the Crows? Like we have a scroll through, and obviously you open the AFL record season guide, and there's the players you brought to the club. We see, I guess it'd probably be one who's off Broadway a little bit. Whether it's John Cock at pick 67, he's gone on to have a terrific career. Tippett comes through in the 30s. Like, look at what he's done. Marich, I don't know if you expected Ivan to play like he has.
Great man,
Bernie Vince. Got him out of the country footy, you know, Woodville, West Torrens. Is there one that stands out for you?
You look, probably not really, and I don't mean to sound kind of flippant about it, but probably the thing that I find great about the game is really, it might sound really corny, but it's the friendships that you actually acquire as part of the whole experience. And probably from an age point of view and all the rest of it, I've made some really close friends along the way, in terms of you know, young men that you've probably provided an opportunity to. I was even in a wedding party for for one of the boys, and that was great. So, but the ones that stand out from that point of view, where I'm going with it, is probably the older ones, the first lot that you come through with, because you're a little bit closer in every respect, you know, your age and your keenness and your, well, not keenness, but the whole, you know, enthusiasm.
All starting at the same time. That's